More than 3% of American school kids these days are homeschooled. But in states like Missouri and Kansas, homeschoolers get little, if any, oversight from any authority. Decisions on what and how to teach homeschooled students in the two states are left entirely to parents. And that worries some who think it may be time for some level of regulation. KCUR's Kyle Palmer has the story.
At Kansas City's Northeast High School, if a student misses a few days of class, teachers tell Rosalinda Aviles.
3 days, 4 days, 5 days, they'll usually email us and let us know, you know, what's going on. A lot of teachers will have information that we may not have, and so all of that is really helpful.
Aviles is an attendance and dropout specialist with Kansas City Public Schools. Missing school, she says, is often a sign of trouble at home. In the first 3 months of this school year, she and a district social worker already have checked out a lot of potential problems.
Face-to-face, about 594. Letters mailed, 248. Phone calls, estimated at least 365. Home visits, would I say 72-ish.
Aviles has also referred nearly 60 cases of child abuse to authorities and says because of these regular interventions, she is a kind of safety net for her students. It's a safety net some are suggesting was needed in two recent child abuse cases involving homeschooled children.
Jones was arrested last week for beating his wife and torturing his 7-year-old child.
Last month, a Wyandotte County man was arrested and human remains of a still unidentified juvenile were found on his property. In another case, a Topeka couple with 16 kids were arrested for child abuse. In both cases, the parents had registered as homeschoolers.
You know, if they want to homeschool their child, they really have every ability to do that, and it is extremely difficult to have any kind of oversight of that.
That's Mark Tallman with the Kansas Association of School Boards. He says these recent cases are isolated, but keeping better track of homeschooled students would be a big step forward.
Who are the children that are enrolled? Or at a minimum, how many children are enrolled? That alone would be a start.
If that sounds elementary, consider that currently neither Kansas nor Missouri can give accurate counts of how many children are being homeschooled. In Kansas, all it takes to register a homeschool is a simple online form that takes about 5 minutes to fill out. After that, homeschoolers have no requirement to check in with the state. Currently, Kansas says it has about 30,000 registered homeschools, a number that is almost certainly too high. In Missouri, the numbers are even more vague because homeschoolers there don't even have to register, though they must abide by a rarely enforced statute that says parents maintain records of their children's progress.
These are just unbelievably tragic stories, and regulation isn't the answer.
Pat Kangas and her husband Todd of Lenexa have spent the last 35 years homeschooling their 8 children, primarily for religious reasons, and by any measure, it's been a success. The youngest remains in high school, and the other 7 have graduated and gone on to college and careers. Kangas says don't blame responsible homeschoolers like them for these recent cases.
The people who abuse the home education method, do they reflect on us? No more than in a government-funded school where you graduate illiterate students and you graduate students who can go to Ivy League schools.
I have been informed several times of homeschools that we know are not really doing what they're supposed to be doing, but we have no authority to do anything about that.
Janet Waugh is a member of the Kansas State Board of Education. Her comments echo those of public school officials on both sides of the state line. For all the Pat Kangases out there, they say, there are also homeschool families shirking their kids' educations. Waugh suggests the families doing it right need to take the lead.
Because I know that a lot of them are doing the wonderful things, and maybe they could even have some oversight. That's a possibility, too, because I know there's some homeschool groups, and if the homeschool groups would police themselves.
But Cheryl Westra says moves like that would be mere window dressing. She helps lead the Learn Home Education Network, a secular homeschool group of more than 200 families in Kansas City. Westra admits homeschooling is not for everyone. Plenty of families start and find themselves unprepared. But her group helps homeschoolers pool resources, hire tutors, and give each other emotional supports.
Learn is there to help families, to support families in their homeschooling journey, to give them the information they need so they can legally homeschool, to give them the information so that they can find the resources that they want.
New regulations of any kind are unlikely to be implemented anytime soon. Mark Tallman with the Kansas Association of School Boards says, at least in Topeka, there is no political will behind such a move.
The homeschool community has traditionally been very well organized and very emphatic in their belief that they don't want any kind of government oversight whatsoever.
Homeschoolers will likely cheer that idea. At the same time, educators in Kansas and Missouri are left to wonder what other cases of abuse in homeschool families are still out there that their states don't know about.
Joining us now to discuss the often misunderstood world of homeschooling are Dr. Robert Kunzman. He's an independent researcher from Indiana University who serves as managing director for the International Center for Home Education Research. And Rob, nice to have you. Good morning.
Thanks. Good to be with you.
And also with me here in the studio is KCUR's Kyle Palmer, whose report you just heard. Kyle, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Well, Rob, why do some parents turn away from traditional public schools and opt for homeschooling? What's going on out there?
Well, we don't know entirely for sure because we don't really have a good idea of all the homeschoolers who are out there, but the survey data that we do have suggests three main reasons. Dissatisfaction with conventional school curriculum environment, desire to provide moral or religious instruction of a certain sort, and then an emphasis on family as the center of daily life where they feel as though the values of the public schools may not resonate with their own. They want a less structured or routinized form of education, and perhaps they want to prioritize their family time.
You know, and given that, Kyle, what's the trend out there, if there is a trend? Is the number of homeschoolers in this country on the rise, or what do we know about that?
Well, I will say, at least for Kansas and Missouri, it's impossible to tell just because, as we'll get into later, regulations in both states are so loose that it's hard to come up with any firm numbers. But the homeschooling parents that I have talked to here locally who are in charge of homeschooling organizations have seen an exponential rise in their membership. We're talking about in the hundreds or in the thousands. It has become increasingly popular, and the families that I've talked to also say that at least socially it's also become more accepted. When they started off back in the late 80s or early 90s, they commented about how fringe it seemed or how people kind of looked at them sideways, but now that doesn't happen as much anymore, and it's seen as a much more, I guess you would call it, mainstream or acceptable form of educating your children.
You know, Rob, as you look out across the country, what's the trend that you're seeing when it comes to the numbers of children being homeschooled these days?
Well, again, the research is a little limited, but it appears that we probably had about a doubling of homeschoolers in the first decade of the 2000s.
Wow.
And I think that anecdotal reports would back that up, that the numbers, they certainly have grown over the past 25 years remarkably. And the question, I think, is whether or not that will continue to be the same pace of acceleration moving forward. But it doesn't seem to be slowing down.
You know, one of the big arguments against homeschooling is that the kids, you know, don't get socialized. They don't learn how to be around other kids they may not know well. But a good response to that comes from Cheryl Westra. She's a homeschool mom here in Kansas City. You heard her in Kyle's homeschooling report just a couple of minutes ago. Here she is talking about her kids' socialization.
Their friends are all ages, and they're involved in the community and volunteering and in, you know, sports and all kinds of things. But their main socializers aren't all 14-year-olds or all 7-year-olds or all 9-year-olds. And so I feel like our kids are really well-rounded. They've had lots of experiences for us as a family. And again, there's lots of ways to raise families. This is how we've chosen to raise our family. For us as a family, it's been really beneficial that it's brought us closer together. We've had shared experiences. And it's been a joy.
So, Kyle, what Cheryl's saying is that it's not an issue at all.
Yeah, and this came up repeatedly when I was talking to families who do homeschools that, in fact, socialization often the misconception is that it's difficult for homeschool kids to be socialized, but socialization is, in fact, a strength of homeschooling because homeschoolers, children being homeschooled, deal with and interact with all kinds of people, people outside of their age groups, as Ms. Westra noted. They don't just go to school with 30 other 10-year-olds, or they're not in the same grade with 400 other 16-year-olds, but they have to interact with their parents, with other family members, with older siblings, with people out in the real world when they go out, because a lot of homeschoolers do education out, as they say, on the road.
You know, Rob, so given all this, you sort of wonder then why homeschooling still carries with it, I think I'm accurate in saying, at least something of a stigma. Why is that?
Well, in regards to socialization, I think that the comments are certainly apt, that there are all sorts of ways to become effectively socialized and different versions and visions of that. I think that, homeschooling, you know, the families that I've spent a lot of time with over the years, many of them are richly involved in their communities and interacting with a wide range of people, but some are not. Some are fairly isolated, either by choice or by geography or circumstance of some other kind. So I think that probably to the extent that outsiders know some of these families or know some of these families, that probably stands out to them, even if they may be outliers, as indicative of a potential weakness of homeschooling. But again, it really depends. Much like in a public school context, effective socialization is a variable as well.
But what about the stigma attached to homeschooling, Rob? What are you seeing when it comes to that? I mean, is it beginning to diminish? Are you seeing a change there?
I think so. I think it has, as the numbers have grown, more people know homeschoolers, and I think that that's typically a dynamic that occurs when outsiders know of homeschooling families, they know they're doing a good job, they like their kids, what have you, that tends to reduce the stigma overall. And I think that as the numbers have grown, more resources have cropped up where families can be engaged in the community more broadly and interacting with a wide range of people, not just homeschoolers.
Well, let's open up this conversation to our listeners. If you homeschool, tell us why. How do you assess your kids' ability? How would you design an assessment of your teaching? Should the state provide a little more oversight or not? One of the big questions concerning homeschooling these days is this whole idea of regulation. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, or you can tweet us at KCUR. Are up to date. Our topic this morning is homeschooling. You know, Rob, when did homeschooling begin? What's some of the history here?
Well, it emerged in the 60s and 70s, primarily in terms of the modern homeschooling movement, particularly a countercultural effort to move away from institutional structures. And it gained steam in the 80s in particular, and particularly gained a number of adherents amongst conservative Christians who saw it as a way to instill in their children a different set of values and emphases, both in terms of curriculum and beyond that. And that's really been the group that has maintained numerical predominance, it appears, and certainly political influence over the past couple of decades.
And are you seeing it change over the years, Rob?
I think that some empirical suggestions and certainly a lot of anecdotal reports would suggest that the homeschool movement is broadening and diversifying, and that there are people who are choosing it for a wide range of reasons now beyond sort of what might be considered stereotypical, conservative religious rationales. So I do think
survey on this topic showed that only 16% of homeschoolers surveyed said religious instruction was the main reason why they were being homeschooled.
That's true. I think some of the other questions in that survey, though, indicate that religion and moral instruction remain one of the primary reasons, even if it's not considered to be the major reason. So it still occupies a very significant portion of the overall rationale.
Let's go to some phone calls here. We're getting a bunch of them at 816-235-2888. Al from Kansas City, Missouri. Al, you're on Up to Date.
Good morning, Steve. Great show.
Thanks.
Excuse me. I work in a situation where we do see a lot of homeschoolers, and one thing I noticed kind of right off is that the demographic is mostly white. We don't have a very diverse homeschooler population. And the other thing, in Kansas City, I was surprised that there weren't more homeschoolers actually from Kansas City area, because if you can't get into the school of your choice in Kansas City, there aren't a lot of options. But my main concern is why there isn't more diversity in that population. And I can leave that to you to just go online with.
Yeah, thanks, Al. I appreciate that. Kyle Palmer, what did you find in your reporting about the whole diversity question?
Well, it is a very good question, and I think one that I can't readily answer with statistics or numbers, but I will say that the homeschoolers that I encountered were largely middle class to affluent and white. Mm-hmm. And I think you have to look at the simple
mathematical calculation that you need to be making some money in order to do this, because one person is going to have to quit their job or not have a job in order to devote mm-hmm. their full attention to the kids at home. I mean, they are a full-time instructor. This is a full-time job that at least the mothers, and they were all mothers that I encountered, were doing. I mean, from 8 o'clock in the morning until middle of the afternoon, late afternoon in some cases, and doing it on the weekends and doing it over summers. It is a very tough job, just like teaching in a formal school is. So you have to have an income that allows one person to support a whole family.
Mm-hmm. Is diversity an issue for the homeschooling movement, Rob?
Well, I don't know if they would necessarily consider it an issue as a negative. Most recent data suggest about 70% of homeschoolers in the U.S. are white. But these numbers, particularly when you start to drill down into subcategories of different religious or different ethnic minorities, become a lot more a lot less certain. So that's a general sense, and it appears that number has been growing over the years as well. But I don't get a sense that is necessarily an emphasis amongst homeschoolers one way or the other.
I also wanted to ask here in our first half about homeschooling parents, the teachers themselves, and how they deal with topics they're not well-versed in. Math would be my topic I would not be well-versed in. Let's hear what Pat Kangas, a mom from Lenexa, a homeschooling mom from Lenexa, told Kyle Palmer about this.
In the higher math subjects, just our particular children, because we had so many, I wasn't able to keep up with all the higher math, even though I had completed it myself. So I have a really good friend who has a degree in math, and she was home educating her students, and I asked if she would just tutor mine along with hers once a week, and she did that, and so that was a great situation. We're really very resourceful in finding ways to help our children get the needs met for their education.
And Kyle, I assume you can be more resourceful as a homeschooling parent these days because of something called the internet, right?
Well, yes, absolutely. I mean, the mothers that I talked to, and again, they were all mothers, spoke of doing a lot of research. And again, this is not too different from what even new teachers in formal settings do, is stay one day ahead of your kids by doing a little bit of research. Used to be going to the library. Now it is going onto the internet, Googling stuff, reading textbooks. They did do a lot of that. But again, I think Ms. Kangas, who again has shown, as I said in the story, great success as a homeschool mom. 8 kids, 7 of them have gone on to college careers, some in the military. It does speak to an affluence, right? You need to have that network of connections. She knows someone who has mm-hmm. a math degree.
Mm-hmm.
And not all families and parents in all economic situations can say that.
Let's go back to some calls and Norman, who has some questions about homeschooling. Norman's from Liberty. Good morning, Norman.
Hi. I've seen both ends of the spectrum. I had very good friends who homeschooled their children, and they were absolutely brilliant. And then I went to OBU, Oklahoma Baptist University, and I saw homeschooled children who were taught very fundamentalist Christian beliefs, who were absolutely having meltdowns in the cafeteria because you would imply that the earth was more than 5,000 years old.
Hmm.
So I do think there should be some sort of oversight, even if it's self-oversight of an association of homeschoolers or something. But I think it's a terrible disservice when you have what I think admittedly is a small percentage of the students that are homeschooled showing up to college, and they have their full understanding of science and math is the book of Genesis.
Hmm. Norman, a very interesting point. And Rob Kunzman from Indiana University, what about this notion? We're going to talk about regulation in our second half this morning. But this notion that children might be taught things contrary to generally accepted science, as Norman's pointing out, what about that?
Well, I think that certainly does occur. I think that, as he mentioned, that homeschooling practices and philosophies run the gamut. And we have great success stories, and we have stories of families where their children are being educationally neglected. And I think that certainly some would dispute whether or not teaching religious views such as that amounts to abuse or neglect, but that wide variation certainly does exist.
Okay. Norman, I appreciate the phone call. Let's do this. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue our good conversation about this very important topic of homeschooling that appears to be on the rise, not only in Kansas and Missouri, but across the country as well. We're going to talk about regulation and the lack of regulation in Kansas and Missouri when it comes to this important movement. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. Well, this hour we're talking about the homeschooling movement in Kansas and Missouri and across the country. It's a burgeoning, growing movement. We're visiting with Dr. Robert Kunzman, an independent researcher from Indiana University who focuses on all this. KCUR's Kyle Palmer, who's just done a very extensive story on homeschooling. And joining us now is Scott Woodruff from Purcellville, Virginia. He's the senior counsel for the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. Scott, thanks for taking some time. Good morning.
My pleasure, Steve.
I'm just wondering, Scott, how many states like Kansas and Missouri, when it comes to have this lack of homeschool regulation, very much like our two states here? Are we unusual or not really?
Steve, let me just jump in and say right off the bat that I have a close personal relationship with a child who was severely abused and will suffer life-altering consequences because of it. So this question of abuse that's been brought up by the Michael Jones situation isn't just academic, it's very personal. And if what I've read in the press is true, I am saddened and sickened by that situation.
I understand. Let's go back to the regulation question, Scott. Are Kansas and Missouri outliers when it comes to this lack of regulation or not?
Every state in the country has at least an implicit good faith requirement that parents provide a good faith education. That's kind of the bedrock legal requirement across America. That is the one that every homeschooler, directly or indirectly, must follow. Kansas has that. Missouri has that as well. Once you get beyond that, you really get into the realm of how much wasteful red tape homeschool families have to follow just to exercise their right to educate their children at home. Missouri has a very burdensome requirement of keeping track of hours you teach your child. My wife and I homeschooled there, and it was very burdensome to have to track hours every day for every child. In Kansas, it's not quite so burdensome, but under the case of In re Sawyer, families have to provide a good faith education that has to show evidence of planning, scheduling, and testing.
But Scott, you know, public school teachers say they have so many regulations they can't see straight. Why should homeschoolers be given a break here compared to their public school counterparts?
Okay, homeschooling is a freedom guaranteed by the Constitution. When someone has a freedom, we don't say, you can exercise your freedom if you jump through these 27 hoops. We say, here's your freedom. If you abuse that freedom, you'll be punished. And so homeschooling and public education are just absolutely apples and oranges when you talk about it that way.
But as you look across the country, Scott, as you look at states like Vermont, if I understand correctly, maybe California, maybe some of the northeastern states, the level of regulation is ratcheted up even more dramatically than what you're describing for Kansas and Missouri.
Oh, sure. There are states that have dramatically higher red tape burdens like Pennsylvania, New York. And then if you really kind of want to give a blank slate to regulators, you can look at Massachusetts or Rhode Island, where the school officials actually have nearly blank slate approval power over homeschool families. But the irony is, in those states with the highest level of regulation, even in the states where officials have blank slate approval power, homeschool kids don't do any better academically. It just doesn't make a difference in terms of how kids turn out.
But given the level of responsibility here, Scott, a lot of people would argue that there should be some regulation to ensure that all kids are getting a quality education that they deserve.
There's already a regulation that applies to all 50 states, and that is that parents must provide a good faith education. Our organization has defended parents who've been in court for being accused of violating that. So there are laws in place. They are enforced. Families who don't obey that law are going to court.
You know, Kyle Palmer, as your story pointed out that we listened to in our first half here this morning, you mentioned there's not a whole lot of regulation in states like Kansas and Missouri. Are you expecting that to change in the wake of these two high-profile child abuse cases that you talked about in your report?
No.
Because
short answer, because there is not a lot of political will behind it. I think, especially in Kansas, homeschooling has become so mainstream that there is, mainstream in that it's. I think it's become socially accepted, and it is a very actually powerful political force. A lot of several state legislators homeschool, several state officials homeschool,
mm-hmm.
and it's something that I think they value very highly and they cherish. Talked to several lawmakers and talked to several state education officials in both Missouri and Kansas who say, no, this is not going to change at all, though we do have educators in the public sector who are suggesting some what they would call minimal reforms or minimal regulations or oversights that could be added to what is in existence in both states already.
Rob Kunzman with the International Center for Home Education Research, again with Indiana University. Give us your sense, Rob, of the range of regulation that's out there. And I'm also wondering, given the different types of regulations in the different states, has Congress shown any interest at all in weighing in here from the national perspective?
Well, education is for the most part left up to the states in terms of regulation, so that's likely not something that would happen. About half of the states require either just notice of homeschooling or nothing at all. 10 states have no requirements whatsoever in terms of accountability. I would say that probably there are a handful, half dozen or so states that would be considered to be on the stricter end of the spectrum. Standardized testing, portfolio review, record keeping, those are typically the types of instruments that are used in the states that have regulation.
So you're saying that the regulation levels, as Scott was saying a few minutes ago, Rob, they range from virtually nothing to fairly extensive.
That's correct.
And is your organization...
Hey, I wonder if I could jump in.
Yes, Scott.
Just kind of gently challenge Rob on a statement he made a moment ago when he said that 10 states have no homeschool regulation at all. And I've been practicing law for over 35 years and working for HSLDA since 1998, and I've analyzed and actually helped to write the homeschool laws of several states. And I can tell you that statement simply isn't accurate. There is no state in the country that does not have any homeschool regulations.
But it sounds like, though, Scott, that some of these regulations are fairly – there's not a lot of regulation there.
Right. The absolute best regulations are the ones that state the principle, require parents to live up to it, and if they don't live up to it, there are consequences. For example, Oklahoma has a great regulation which says that parents are required to send their children to private or public school or provide other means of education. And if parents don't provide other means of education, they can be held accountable.
Yeah. Kyle?
I would say this came up in my discussions with state officials. I mean, no educator in a public realm is suggesting wholesale changes to how homeschooling is done in Kansas and Missouri. I think everyone that I talked to realized the reality of the situation and where both states were both, I think, politically as well as sociologically, if you would say, in terms of their acceptance of homeschooling and what it means. But they are suggesting some minimal things, like should we at least know who is enrolled in a homeschool? If not their names, at least the number in each state or in each local school district, so that if there is a very tragic circumstance, God forbid, like the ones that have occurred in Kansas in recent days, that there is a little bit more oversight and state responsibility to deal with, admittedly, limited problems like that.
Scott, what about that point that Kyle just made? Should there be a minimal set of regulations so that we know who the homeschooling kids are out there?
When homeschooling in its modern avatar burst on the scene back in the late 70s, early 80s, it was still pretty much of an unknown factor. It was kind of like Education X. The public didn't know much about it. Lawmakers didn't know much about it. And when they enacted laws back in those days, they tended to be really heavy in the burdensome red tape. But as time went on and research was developed and folks looked into homeschooling and saw the results of homeschooling, legislatures became more and more comfortable that, yeah, homeschooling really does work. Homeschooling is a viable, successful form of education. And so as time has gone on, with virtually no exceptions, every state that has changed its homeschool law has reduced red tape. And so what Rob is suggesting that these various lawmakers have suggested of adding something else, that would be rolling the clock back to a time when there was wholesale skepticism about homeschooling before the advent of research demonstrating that it's a very successful form of education.
You know, Rob, does your International Center for Home Education Research take a position on how much regulation there should be out there?
Well, I think that it's important to recognize that the research is wholly inconclusive in terms of homeschooler success academically. Because we don't know who they are, we have no way of actually evaluating what would be the average homeschooler. And I think that one of the things that's worth thinking about is how can we honor and acknowledge the value of homeschooling and the ways in which it provides flexibility for parents and still think about how we can protect the basic educational interests of children. And I think trying to find a middle ground there is probably the most sensible way to go. It's an opportunity to enable parents to make the choices that they want to make at home and to also then be able to show in a very simple way that their students are making progress in basic skills of literacy and numeracy, and then let them go do their work.
So bottom line, though, Rob, is that you're suggesting that the evidence out there is lacking when it comes to how well homeschool students are doing academically across the board. We know about some of them, but we don't know about all of them.
That's right. The studies pull from volunteer samples. And even the studies that Scott was referring to in regards to the effect of regulation, the states that don't have any assessment, there's no way to determine the how those students are doing and to compare them with higher regulation states across the board. So we really don't have that information.
And Rob,
if I can make a quick response to
that. Yes, Scott.
I understand Rob's comment there. Let me kind of offer the counterpoint that without exception, all the research that is out there shows that homeschool kids do just as well or better academically than others. Now, granted, maybe there's no such thing as a perfect study, but there are precisely zero studies out there that I'm aware of, even flawed studies, that come to a rational conclusion that homeschool kids fare worse. So what we have on one hand is half a dozen, 8 or 10 studies showing that homeschool kids do better, each of which could possibly be criticized, and on the other hand, zero studies that show they do worse.
But if it quacks
like a duck, it might be a duck.
But Scott, if we don't know who all the homeschool kids are, isn't that a glaring gap in the research here?
No, not at all. I was working in the West Virginia legislature a while back at a time when homeschool kids had to score in the 40th percentile on standardized tests in order to pass muster under West Virginia law. And the state kept track of the scores they turned in. And the state published information showing that under those standardized tests, homeschoolers scored way above average. So that was a sample that wasn't voluntary. It wasn't really a sample. It was a mandatory collection. And even the West Virginia data shows that homeschool kids did better.
Rob, you want to weigh in there?
Sure. Typically, many of the states that have requirement for testing, for instance, Oregon, many families who are off the grid entirely, who've never reported their existence to the state as homeschoolers, simply don't take those tests. So those types of studies are really not particularly helpful when we're thinking about protecting the interests of children whose families don't follow the rules and do not pay attention to the basic interests of their children. I think also that there are studies that suggest, small-scale studies, that suggest that occasionally that weaknesses do occur in particular parts of homeschool learning. But again, the bottom line is if the studies are flawed, you can have 10 flawed studies, but if they're only pulling from homeschoolers who volunteer not pulling from homeschoolers who are probably the ones who are avoiding the tests altogether, then it doesn't tell us anything.
I'm going to get our listeners back. Scott, hang on a second, Scott. I'm going to get our listeners back involved here before the show gets away from me here. If you homeschool, tell us why. Where do you come down on this whole question of regulation? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Scott, I'm sorry I had to cut you off. Hop back in here.
No problem. Here's another way to look at this. I've been helping homeschool families now, like I said, since 98. I've never had a college call me up and say, Scott, the homeschool kids who are coming to our college just don't do well. They have no work ethic. They can barely read.
Right.
I've never had an employer, a GE or an Apple or a big corporation say, you know what, Scott, you're sending me homeschool graduates who don't know how to work. They don't know how to read or understand manuals. So I've never gone to a juvenile detention center and found it full of homeschool kids. So let's look at the results of what these kids are actually doing out there, and you will find that employers love homeschool kids, that colleges love homeschool graduates, and that homeschool kids do not show up in jail or juvenile detention center at even equal to their proportionate rate.
Elizabeth in Overland Park wrote this, I've always been concerned that no program is in existence, to my knowledge, to guarantee the homeschool teacher has the education and credentials to be qualified to teach. How can a person who has only a high school diploma be qualified to teach effectively? Is there a credential requirement homeschooling parents have to have? She says there should be. I think we've sort of covered this, Scott, but there's not a requirement out there, at least in many states.
Well, let me quote to you from the Fraser Institute, a Canadian policy analysis organization. They said, quote, poorly educated parents who choose to teach their children at home produce better academic results for their children than public schools do.
Wow.
One study we reviewed found that students taught at home by mothers who never finished high school scored a full 55 percentage points higher than public school students from families with comparable education levels, unquote.
Rob, does that make sense to you?
Well, I think the overall sentiment makes sense. I would take issue, again, with the methodology of that study. But it certainly doesn't mean that parents need to have advanced degrees in order to effectively homeschool their children. What parents need more than anything is a sense of their own strengths and weaknesses as teachers. And they need to know when they need to go find additional resources and assistance for their children, as the earlier quote in the radio show spoke to. So I wouldn't dispute the idea that parents have that capacity as long as they seek out the resources that they need to supplement their own instruction.
Lots of phone calls here as we talk about the pros and cons of homeschooling. Quillen from Kansas City, Missouri, he was homeschooled himself. Quillen, good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I just want to say that, you know, I was homeschooled. It was completely normal. It wasn't for religious reasons or anything. It was just my parents didn't really like the school or the town that, you know, I was being raised in. And I grew up perfectly normal. I think I'm very smart and have a good life. I'm almost 40 now. And
Quillen, was there a stigma when you were being homeschooled? Was there a stigma that you that was attached to what you were going through?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
I grew up in a very small town, and people thought we were aliens. They thought we were weird, but we weren't. We were more cultured than a lot of people in that town because, that was part of us not going to the school.
And do you think the stigma has lessened as the years have passed, Quillen, when it comes to homeschooling just in general for kids these days?
I would hope so.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. I'm glad you called. Thanks very much.
Of course. Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Mark from Overland Park. Mark, you're on Up to Date.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. My daughter homeschools my grandkids, and she decided to do it because they have a particular disability that they weren't able to accommodate at the school. And it was a great school district, but they were expecting him to be able to perform with the rest of the kids, and just wasn't going to happen. And he was starting to feel really inferior, and now he's being homeschooled. He's doing great.
Yeah. Kyle?
Well, and that's a real particular story that was not touched upon in my reporting, but that I in the articles and research that I read and in homeschool parents that I did talk to who mentioned other homeschool families, that particular issue of either a student with a disability or with some sort of learning need on either end of the spectrum, where they need to be challenged more because they have such high cognitive functioning, or they do have some sort of very particular learning need that they need fulfilled. That's a real motivation that I think warrants further looking into that I didn't really touch upon, but it's very interesting.
Yeah, they're doing very well, and I say not because it wasn't a good school district, but they just couldn't give them the attention, and she's doing great. And she's actually a physician, and they're able to do that, so
right.
We're very fortunate.
Mark, I'm glad you called. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Bye.
Rob, I'm wondering if you can talk about what makes someone a good candidate for homeschooling. Can you walk down that road for us a little bit?
Well, I think what I would start with is what I mentioned a minute ago, that a parent, I think, needs to understand their own strengths and weaknesses as a teacher. I think that they need to obviously have a profound commitment to investing the time and attention that such a task requires. And I think that they need to have the type of relationship with their children where it's going to be a fruitful set of encounters on a daily basis, and sometimes that can be challenging, as any parent knows. But as a result, I'm not sure that there's any particular set of criteria that we could point to as saying this would always make the best homeschooling situation, or this would necessarily lead to a problematic homeschooling situation.
Scott, I'm wondering what you would say to parents who might be considering homeschooling their kids, because the idea of it can be overwhelming, at least to some people. What should they be thinking about?
I would encourage them to think about just the joy of them being the ones who get to teach their daughter to read, or them being the ones who get to teach their son history, or them being the ones to teach their child constitutional law, that as public school teachers will tell you, teaching is an incredibly rewarding experience. You get lots of times of joy and happiness, and that's why so many people want to teach. And so when you're a parent and you teach your own kids, you get to experience all that joy with your own kids. And it makes for a family with an amazing atmosphere where the kids growing up liking each other, wanting to stay in touch, and it's amazing how well it all fits together.
Rob, what would you add to that, this notion of what parents should think about if they want to homeschool their kids?
Well, certainly I think Scott's point about, if parents aren't enjoying the experience, if they see it as an onerous task every day, then that's probably going to show up in terms of the quality of the experience for their kids. But certainly, I think that the opportunity to do that with one's children is one of the most precious gifts that parents have. And certainly that can happen whether or not, and should happen, whether or not a parent chooses to homeschool. I think that the opportunity to engage with what a student is studying, even if they are at school for a few hours a day, is certainly a responsibility and a privilege of all parents.
Kathy wrote us this in part to talk about homeschooling her two kids. Homeschooling, she writes, also allowed me to advance each in subjects they had mastered and hold them back in subjects they had not, such as the year I moved my daughter onto fifth grade in most of her subjects, but not in math. She was struggling with the fourth grade basics and not in history, as it required some abstract thought for which she was not ready. Andrew writes us this with this question. I grew up in the public school system in Iowa. Each year, beginning in third grade, we took the Iowa Test of Basic Skills. Later, we took the Iowa Test of Educational Development. Why can't the homeschool students be required to take these common standardized tests the same as public school students, Scott?
Okay, let's go back to the data that shows that adding regulations, adding red tape for homeschoolers does not actually empirically help them do better academically. I mean, it's easy to kind of have a gut reaction, like, gee, if you just made them take tests, if you made them turn in more portfolios, they'd do better. But the evidence is not there that it actually helps the homeschool kids. And back to the point that this is a freedom guaranteed by the Constitution. So we don't say you can exercise your freedom if you jump through all these hoops. We say, here's your freedom. If you abuse it, then you'll suffer consequences.
Why not just check their progress, though, Scott? What's the harm in that?
All homeschool regulations are asymmetrical in their consequences, in that if a public school child does poorly on tests, his parents retain the full right to decide how that child should be educated. But in some states that demand year-end assessments, if a homeschool child does poorly on standardized tests, the parents can lose their right to choose how that child will be educated. That's asymmetrical and it's not fair.
We're going to have to leave our conversation there because we're out of time. That was Scott Woodruff, Senior Counsel for the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. Scott, thank you for your time.
You're so welcome.
I want to thank Dr. Robert Kunzman, an independent researcher from Indiana University. He's the Managing Director for the International Center for Home Education Research. Rob, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
In case you are, as Kyle Palmer, thank
you, Kyle. It's good to spend the whole hour with you this time, Steve.
Not bad, eh? Yeah. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR up to date. Tomorrow, Carl Rove joins us, and we'll have Kansas State Representative Linda Gallagher discussing concealed carry laws on State House Blend. That's tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Lisa Rodriguez, Beth Lipoff, and Taylor Johnson. Our senior producer is Steven Steigman. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.